For Mr. Rice, would you like to tell us about your early childhood days in the Cresswell area?
Well, I really lived at Fountain Green.
Oh, Fountain Green.
So I was raised at Fountain Green until I was about 15 years old, left home. And went on my own.
Or do you want to maybe tell us about your parents, what they were like?
Well, father was in the Oxford business. Them days we went around and bought chickens and calves and cows or something. Quit milking hall in the Balmer. And he had two or three trucks. And I helped him when I was a kid. Helped school. I think I'd have excuse to get on a truck. So I stayed off and on. I worked for him until maybe 17. And then I went off on construction work for a year or two, come back to Fountain Green. And then later I got married when I was around 21. And when the workarounds, I went to Balmer and drove a truck then for about 17 years. Then I got tired of driving trucks. I decided to want to go in the store business. So I came back to, looked all around, store at Fountain Green. They wanted $14,000 for it. Came out here, Mr. Hamby owned the one at Cresswell. And he offered to me for $17,000. I figured it was the best buy, so I bought it. And then I've been here now 39 years. Of course, about 11 years ago, I got tired of working. I leased a store in the gas station out. Of course, since then, during the time, I've built a new store in the gas station. It's an old country store to start with. So, here sitting now talking to you.
Well, when you were with the trucking industry in Baltimore, what were some of the things you would do there?
Well, I was over the road driver. I drove from Baltimore to Pittsburgh, Baltimore to Bridgeport, Connecticut. The roads were narrow in them days for tractor and trailers, you know. And but we didn't load or we didn't unload. We'd go to Pittsburgh and spend the night, then we'd come back. And then like Bridgeport, go up one day, one night, back the next day, night. We'd always take off 8-10 hours on the other end. And I liked it, but my back didn't like it. I had back trouble, so I decided to get off the trucks and start in business. So I made it. A lot of fellows used to quit, go in business, 2 years later come on their jobs back. So I was determined I wasn't going to go back, go to work again. So I just worked hard until I made it. So.
Oh, could you tell us about when you said it was hard during the 30s? Can you tell us about what that was like?
Oh, how hard it was. Well, this fellow Pete Shaver and Bar had two trucks, and I was only about 17, 18. And we used to haul canned goods from these canned houses around the county, you know, to New York City. And we'd load them by hand, go to New York, unload them by hand, and come back, get another load, and do the same thing again the next day. Next night, go up, come back, load again, get a few hours sleep. So one week, we made five trips. End of the week, he'd give me $15. That's $3 a trip to New York and back. That's how rough things were. And of course, he paid for our meals. And you're going to be able to fit the cent, you know. And down and up in Jersey, you stop and get a good meal, 50, 55 cents. So I got a little experience of driving anyway, you know, bigger trucks. So then I went to Ballmer and got a job with the Horton Motor Lines, Associated Transport with the tractor and trailers. And I had some friends from around here that was down there and helped me get on. But that's about all on the trucking end of it, I guess. But if you want to know about the roads, these are all dirt roads in them days. And when I was a kid, I used to steal, take my father's truck, little old Model T Ford, and come out here. And there's the Handy Boys. They had the store in them days. And a dirt road all the way from Fountain Green. And the other way, it found going toward Hickory, that was all dirt, everything, dirt roads in. We got the second, in the late 20s, we got the second radio around Fountain Green. There, a salesman came from Glen Burnie. Not from Glen Burnie, from Upper Marlboro. He was a cashier in a bank. He was a moonlight selling at Ward Kent Radios. So he sold, delivered one door to the hotel. Used to be a hotel or inn at Fountain Green. He delivered the first in there, and we went over to listen at it. And he brought us one the next night. It had a board with five tubes on it. And you had to turn three dials to get something. I had a battery down in the basement running it. Hard battery. And when brought back to Fountain Green, I was just a kid watching guys set them poles. And we was about the second one to get electric in Fountain Green. They could only hook up one a day in those days. W.L. Grant got the first. He was hooked up first, and then they come and hooked us up the next day.
So. Or can you tell us about your time on the Umbarger farm?
Oh, I was just a kid then. And I just kidding and lived on the Umbarger farm. I went to that Greenwood School up there. That's right across up where the booth place is. Little building there. It was a two-room school. And Mrs. Kelly was a principal. And then in the first grade, first three grades, we had Mrs. Parker and different ones as was teaching, but Mrs. Kelly was the principal. If we'd done anything wrong, we'd go to her, and she'd spank us if we needed it. And I guess it was from where we lived on the Umbarger farm, we had to walk over a mile a day each way, and they didn't close the school down bad. Well, they just went anyway. Sometimes there'll only be seven of us there, six or ten, but we'd make it.
What were some of the things you did on the farm? Did you have any chores?
Or no, my father was just, he's working for $30 a month, I believe it was. He worked on the Umbarger farm 2 years, and then he used to work from March to March. And then the second year we was there, Mr. Grant offered him $35 a month. Of course, that included so much milk a day and some molasses and this and that was included in a house. So he put the Umbarger farm and up to the cigar farm. And after he was there a few years, he decided to get an old Model T and start huckstering.
Or maybe could you tell us about some of the things you did in your free time during that era?
Well, I had some rabbit gums and had some steel traps. I'd set them and go out and get up early every morning, go around and see if I could catch me a groundhog or a possum or whatever it may be. Mostly I'd get a polecats. Then I wouldn't get all the scent off of me. Then I have been sent home from school on account for smelling like a polecat. Be doing anything to make a nickel or a dime. And if I caught a rabbit in a rabbit gum, Mr. Harry Whistler used to give me 50 cents for him. So I'd have to take his rabbit and walk all over to Harry Whistler's, which is between Presswell and Fountain Green. And he'd give me the 50 cents for the rabbit. And I was rich then. So I'd have about twice a week I'd catch a rabbit.
Can you tell us about what it was like when you were running the store that you had?
Oh, the store?
Yes.
Oh, I came here in 1947, boy, go for Mr. Handy, like I told you, for $1,700. And it was one electric light bulb was burning in the store. It was over the cash register. So I kept fixing it up. What little money I had, I was had to go to Baltimore, haul my groceries in a car to start with. They didn't deliver up this way in them days. And then I got me a Model A panel body truck and got so it wouldn't hold them. So I'd borrow a Kuwait Arp truck sometimes and go in and get a load. Then I finally bought me a 3/4 ton Chevrolet. And I'd go to Baltimore every Wednesday with it. And then got so I'd have to go every Wednesday and Thursday because I had produce business kept picking up. But finally the grocery company decided to deliver it through here. So I didn't need to, then all I had to do was go to Baltimore once a week, get my produce. Then the produce man started coming around. And I guess by that time, I was more or less decided what to do. I had an old store with steps going up to it. And so I decided to talk to my son, Roger, and decided to build a new store. Before that, I built the house. And built the house. And I was doing right good, so the bank gave me a 10-year mortgage on it. I paid it off in 4. So then I decided I had to do something. So I decided to build a new store, and then tore the old one down, put the gas station where the old store was. So business kept picking up, so when I got 60 years old, I decided I'd worked long enough, so I decided to lease it out. So I'm still leasing them.
Or what type of things did you have in your store?
Anything you asked for. A nail file, flashlights, files, fruit jars. If you want a 50-pound bag of potatoes, I'd sell at least 15 50-pound bags by the bag. Apples, anything I could make a dollar on it or a nickel on it. I had even had clothing, men's work clothes, men's shoes, anything it would sell. Paint, you name it, I had it. If I didn't have it, I'd get it the next day. Mm. If I could note anything I didn't have, I'd put it in there. Mm. And then the past few years I was there, I got some fresh killed turkeys, taking the orders for them. I'm going up here in Pennsylvania and getting them. And I'd sell them 300, 350 fresh killed turkeys every Thanksgiving, every Christmas. So that clear you an extra $1,000, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was above you usually, what you usually made. But I look forward to that every year, and my customers did too, because I knew they were nice turkeys. And then when laid around 3 or 4 days, they'd kill them one day, and I'd go that night and get them. And people come pick them up the next day, day before Thanksgiving or day before Christmas. Now they have to put on extra help. One help busy weighing the turkeys and getting them their right size. And candy. Christmas time, I used to take orders. People get Christmas candy. I was old, 3,300 pound of chocolate drops one Christmas. And the only one probably sold more was Klein at Forest Hill and the old store you had. Then I had the lottery, got the lottery machine in. I had the distributing ship for the hunt license for Harvard County. So money orders, no matter what it was, I had it.
When you first opened, can you maybe tell us about some of the prices you had listed for your goods, what they were?
I don't know where I can add enough, but anyway, you get your stuff on canned goods, something like that, you try to mark up 20% profit on a dollar. And coffee, cereal, canned milk, that stuff, you cut it down to maybe 15%. Now on hardware, in clothing, and shoes and stuff, you make 40% profit. Didn't sell as fast, but groceries sold every day. And milk, I'd try to keep the prices of milk down, because that's something people notice.
Or do you remember any of those prices?
Oh, like candy bars and all that stuff. A nickel, soft drinks was a nickel. I remember when soft drinks went up, RC took the lead on it. Went to 10 cents and I raised a lot of cane, but didn't do no good. Mm-hmm. And we told them, go back to the chocolate drops. I think we'd pay around 18 cents a pound for them, and sell them for 29 cents a pound. Mm-hmm. Candy, you'd make about 20-25% profit on them. Mm-hmm. I went to Walmart, like hand loads a certain time of the year. And a little hand loads, you could buy them $1 a basket. You get about 16, 17 for a basket. It all lasts about 2 weeks out of the year. You get them that cheap. Because the market is over flooding, you bring them up here and put 39 cents on them and sell all you get all.
Can you just maybe tell us about some of the happenings in the Crestwell area? They had mentioned that you were like the unofficial mayor of Crestwell. So, do you think you can tell us about some of the happenings you've seen in this area?
Watching. Like where Eastern Christian College is, I remember it very well, about Paul Steinman from Baltimore owned it, had a chicken farm there, and it could have been bought for $40,000. He wasn't making no money on the farm. He had to call managing it. He was a lawyer, and so finally, Paul Harris bought it and lived there a couple of years, and he sold 16 acres in the old mansion off for $60,000, and then he had the other 100 and some acres left, and I understand he had about $200,000 for it, and I'd love to have it, but I was afraid to take a chance. And then I used to deliver groceries, and my son Roger, he was delivering around here, and he was about 14, 15 for me. And we had a people named Oliver. And Miss Oliver, she was telling about her husband. He used to work at the Harford Furnace. And he was the foreman. He used to get $1 a day for being the, and she was 80-some years old when she was telling me about this. And she was telling me about down where the Gailies live now. That used to be the country store, the store for the furnace, you know. People used to go there and do their buying. Of course, it's closed now. Dr. Callahan lived there for years. Now the Gailies live there. And then since then, the Strolls Ball's on down here where the place in Bill Boniface, his wife bought it. And then their son came along, grew up, got married. And they made a racehorse farm out of it. And they get getting bigger, and then went back on Column Road and bought two more farms. And since then, they've sold it and got a bigger farm over near Darlington. And we had a fellow named Mr. O'Connor. He used to come to the store every day, and he would tell me about things that used to happen around here years ago. He's right interesting to talk to, who owned this and who owned that.
Remember anything about, I guess, the changes you've seen in the farms in the area? Or maybe the farm equipment?
Oh, yes. It kept getting, the big farms kept getting better and bigger. And they changed hands, of course. We had Sandfield on down here where the Strawberry Hill farm is, which Shenning's owns now. He went up above Forest Hill and bought a bigger farm. His son Sammy runs it for him now. Of course, I hate to see him leave because he's an awful good customer. And then his son James has a Fairview farm over here. And he's gotten larger and larger. And both of them are very successful. Shenning's and Fielder, about the two biggest farmers around here producing milk.
Were in your store, did you ever sell any farm equipment?
What? No, I don't believe it did, because Coles of Churchville and all that kind of stuff, and I didn't know too much about farming. And I just didn't handle farm equipment. I had strainer pads, such as that, you know, but not the tractor stuff.
Well, can you maybe just tell us about, or mention in your form that you were, a well-tapped source for information, for truant officers and the deputy sheriffs. Maybe could you tell us a few stories about that?
About what now?
Or about your information you give to like truant officers or policemen, deputy sheriffs.
Maybe I don't know exactly what you mean.
Could you maybe tell us some stories about when you would be talking to either truant officers or deputy sheriffs in this Creswell area?
They used to all, deputy sheriffs, they wanted to know about where somebody was at or would live or something. They always used to seem to stop and ask me. Same way with your revenue men. They thought they were still around. They used to come to ask me different questions if I ever sold them any sugar and done this and that. Or if I knew of any stills around. Anything else?
Or maybe could you just tell us about some of your childhood experiences, like what you do in the winter or during the summer months?
You mean now?
When you were a child.
Well, there just wasn't much to do. Because we knew, unless about 15 years old, we didn't even have electric. And you'd have a lamp, you'd do your book work or homework, or first you'd probably go to bed with the chickens and get up with them. There just wasn't much to do. Of course, summertime you go to a creek someplace and go swimming. Didn't have no bathing suits, but you'd go down by a run and go anyway.
Or did you do any like sleighing or ice skating?
Oh yeah, we used to sled. If the snow, of course, had more snow than you had now, but we used to go sledding all the time. Usually we'd come in by dark. Then after we got a little older, we'd go out after dark.
Or would you just like to tell us about your childhood home, what that was like, and how you would heat it in the wintertime, or the plumbing?
There wasn't no plumbing. We all had outhouses, you know. And we all had a cook stove, so we probably mostly stayed in the kitchen. The rest of the house too cold to stay in. And then when we'd open the doors from the kitchen to the rest of the house at night, try to warm the rest of the house a little bit. Of course, we had those, they call them bed ticks in them days, filled with straw. And had plenty of blankets to sleep under them, but there's frost all in wintertime, all over the windows, it's so frosty you couldn't see out. It's so cold. And I can remember my father when he was making that $30 a month. He bought a Model T Ford. And I'd imagine, I'd say that would be around 19.